Mr. Harris.
Gut.
Alon Harel,
okay.
Hebrew University. I had several questions. One has to do with this legal situation. As far as I understood it, you need actually to prove the commission of a crime in order to be civilly committed.
Richtig, natürlich.
So there's no way by which, like in the Anglo-American, in the United States or Israel for that matter, in which a person could be civilly committed without having committed a crime, am I right?
Doch.
No, that's not right. That's not the case. There are two paths. There's another way of civilly committing people. There's a preventative civil commitment. If someone, because of their behavior, threatens to become dangerous to themselves or to others, then they can also be civilly committed because of, on the basis of a psychiatric report through the courts. This has nothing to do with criminal law here. And my specific area, or my specialist area, is the way criminals are committed. But there are two options, yes.
Another concern I had, I heard you kind of hinting and even suggesting that courts and judges do not operate as monitors on psychiatrists, but they in fact go along. And I heard several examples that you stated, and I want to clarify them. One had to do with the second expert opinion. Actually, this was raised also by one of the witnesses, and it's quite interesting. There is a reluctance, I mean, am I right to say that there is a reluctance on the part of courts to hear or accept a second expert opinion?
Das ist korrekt. Yes, this is correct. It is the case that the court orders an expert, and they have their own in-house experts, as it were. The experts know what the court wants to hear, and the court knows, you know, what way the wind's blowing in the case of a particular expert, and they find it very hard to find an alternative expert because they're considered unsound. Naturally, this is all very irrational, because if I'm a good expert, a good psychiatrist, then I will come to a correct conclusion, regardless of who commissions my report. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with one another. But de facto, it's the case that you will hardly find anyone who's prepared to write a report commissioned by the defense, for example. This makes it much harder to defend a mandate. If I don't feel I'm in the position to present a report from an expert that I have commissioned. I went through the case with Mr. Zabat, who's been there for 30 years. I commissioned an expert, a professor for forensic psychiatry in Mainz. He was prepared to write a report on Mr. Zabat, and he did so. Although the clinic wouldn't give him any documents, he only spoke to Mr. Zabat for 2 hours. And then afterwards, the clinic said, well, he only spent 2 hours to go through all of the files and to talk to Mr. Zabat, and they just sort of put it down. But the professor had all of the papers from me because I had the complete file, the whole history of the case. However, by the clinic sort of putting down this report and suggesting that this report was no good anyway, it was all very superficial. It really wasn't taken very seriously, although in the higher court that it went to after that, it was taken more seriously. Although we had to have yet another expert again, and this expert was also ordered by the court. So this is how the game works.
By which you could get a second opinion, but through the court itself. The court itself chooses the expert.
Yeah. Richtig. Yeah. Then there steht in
yes, that's the case.
And you also don't have access to the documents on the basis of which the psychiatrists made the evidence. The documents are not available.
Doch, die habe ich.
Yes, I do have access to these documents in the case of the report that I criticized earlier on, where the, they were working with the HCR20, I did have these documents. I was able to get them from the psychiatrist afterwards, and then afterwards I could prove that the psychiatrist had did not work in a good way. But the court wasn't interested in that anymore. They only read the results. And if it says the man's dangerous and he's going to be a repeat offender, then the court doesn't care how the psychiatrist reached this conclusion. And that's where the dilemma lies.
An alternative system in which the defendant could bring about a second expert opinion, as is common in Anglo-American systems, would you think that this would be a much superior system, because the court would have more of... You think so?
Yeah.
Yes, it would definitely be better, quite clearly, because it's the job of the defense to present evidence to a court. That's really our job. And it's made impossible for us here. That's quite right what you say.
Last question, if I may. Are there cases in which, is it common, does it happen that the court rejects the expert opinion that invited by the court itself that says, we don't think you as a psychiatrist made the right evaluation? Are there many cases, few, none?
Apparently, this is the case. The courts do have the right to do this, that the court has to look and see whether the basis on which the psychiatric report is made, that these are correct and that they can understand how these conclusions have been arrived at. Though I have to say that in real terms, in this area, I only know Neustadt and the various judiciary around there, the court there in Lübeck, etc. So I can't say what things are like elsewhere in Germany. But I can say that in Lübeck, in the area there, it's absolutely 100% the case that they will only believe the expert report. In Lübeck, I have to actually say that they only believe the doctors in the clinic, because my mandate, whose letter I read here, were ignored, because you will have heard that all of the wonderful reports that they had from the prison were ignored because the doctors in the clinic said he was mad. And I think that perhaps this is not a problem only of this clinic. I don't know. Maybe it is. Naturally, many of our questions need to be asked to the court psychiatrists, and that's why you're here, because we want to find out a bit more about you. This is Professor Narr speaking. How do these reports, how are they made? Is there some kind of criteria according to which the experts arrive at their reports, arrive at their conclusions? Do they have to see the people that they're writing reports on? In what conditions do they see these people? I know a case where a psychiatrist in the early 80s, only met the person that he was writing a report about in the court. I know as a voluntary helper in a prison in Heilbronn, who was only interviewed when 6 or 7 police officers were with him, because his aggression was apparently so strong. So he was never actually interviewed on his own without witnesses. So I'd like to know what empirical or perhaps academic evidence do these reporters, these experts have to have? I don't think that an attorney can answer this. In fact, I don't think anyone can answer this at all. I only know what I have found out, that Mr. Sabash, for example, who's been there for 30 years, has said to me that in 1971, he only spent 2 minutes talking to the expert who wrote a report on him, so that he didn't do any intelligence tests whatsoever or anything of the kind, but that he just looked through some of the old papers and wrote out his report on that basis. So naturally, it's the case that the expert has to meet the patient and speak to the patient that he's to do a report on, to do conduct certain tests on him, for example. I know that one of the experts that one of my mandates, who spoke to you directly, that he had the mandate, my mandate, in his clinic for 6 weeks and worked with him closely for quite a long time. But it's just absolutely arbitrary and up to the person writing the report themselves. Perhaps I could just say one other thing as well. I don't wish to do anyone any harm. I've read reports in other cases as well, and there are experts who really deal much more thoroughly with the issue and can really sort of come to terms with what's going on, have real empathy, and come to a much better conclusion. I have read reports that show this quite clearly, but to return to Dr. Hotzelmeister, for example, in October, I rang him and asked to have the files that had led, that he'd used to write his report. He said, "Mr. Burda, who was that?" Or when I spoke to another expert who I felt had real empathy for his mandates, for his patients, he remembered years later who I was talking about. So it's a matter of the maturity and empathy. What role would you say, according to your experience, these prognoses that we've heard about, these predictions, that psychiatrists, I mean, it's quite clear that psychiatrists shouldn't be able to write these predictions. They shouldn't be able to predict how I'm going to respond in another situation. That's clear. So I think these predictions from the very beginning are a mistake. However, but these predictions play a role in a number of places in courts. Firstly, in the accusation, then in the trial itself, then in the actual sentence, and then in the psychiatry or in the prison as well. So there are four areas in which they play a very big role. And fifthly, perhaps the question is whether or not release is considered. What role do you think psychiatric predictions play on average? They play a key role, particularly in this assessment of whether someone should be in prison or in hospital. We have a very unfortunate formulation in our code of laws that an expert has to decide on whether or not it can be expected that the person affected in the future will not be a repeat offender, will not commit any other offenses. And this is an impossible question. But naturally, since no one wants to say that they can't meet the grade here, uncritical psychiatrists simply hide behind a prediction scheme, do the points, then count them up together, draw a line, count them all up, and then say, right, this way or that way. I'd like to take a football metaphor here. There's a bad sort of dribbling and passing between the judiciary and the psychiatric hospitals. Judiciary is somehow becomes sort of arbitrary through psychiatry. They can take it or leave it. The judges don't have to take these reports. They can ignore them or they can use them in order to make their sentence completely arbitrary. And on the other hand, psychiatry, in the way that it is linked to psychiatry, to the judiciary rather, can go quite beyond things that might be purely academic. I don't know if you know the case of Stürmer in 1904, where the Leipzig court, a certain Schreiber, a son of an impossible father, who himself worked in the courts, had his own family placed under guardianship. He said, "Everything they say is uninteresting for us. This man wouldn't hurt a fly. Maybe he thinks he's Napoleon or whatever. Whatever he does, whether he's singing or whistling, but he can do whatever he likes." as a court, we only have to decide when he's actually, whether he's dangerous or not. Whether that this was the famous Schreiber verdict from 1904, and it has some classic constitutional state aspects in it. So this isn't progress, but regression. But my question in this case, in this sort of 1-2 pass, I heard from a court in the corridors, or from a judge rather, that the verdicts are increasingly being influenced by the psychiatrists. Psychiatrists are passing the verdicts, as it were, because the material in its very nature is difficult to understand. And the psychiatry suggests that it can look into the inside of human beings' minds, which the judiciary cannot do. And so the judiciary simply hides behind this. And so it's very easy to say, well, I'm not a psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist said, etc., etc. And so that's how I come to my conclusion. So we regularly hear the formulation in these sentences that we agree with the penal execution chamber's statement. So whether it's a borderline case of something or other with some kind of narcissism and antisocial behavior or whatever, all these little things that are mentioned, and as a result of this, the report suggests to the court that the court will have to go along with this, etc.
I'd just like to put one further question. Whatever you say, I'm going to put my first question anyway. I'm very sorry, I'm going to have to put this question. I'm not expecting an answer from you, but I'd like to put the question nevertheless. It breaks down into three parts. How many psychiatrists from the Nazi era have been condemned? How many pupils of the psychiatrists had are still practicing? And what about the methodology of psychiatry from the NS National Socialist period? I'd like to put these three questions. I don't expect you to provide an answer. That was the fourth question, but I would like an answer to the fifth and final question. As regards to the connection between psychiatry and the legal system, that's what we're dealing with, there is also a psychiatrization of penal laws. And in Germany, I'm not identifying with the Federal Republic of Germany, but just put it this way, in Germany we have a penal code which has a murder clause drawn up at the time of Adolf Hitler, and has been incorporated in the penal code. That's paragraph 211, where not more murder is dealt with, but the murderer. So my question is, to what extent can you talk about a psychiatrization of the penal system in the Federal Republic of Germany? So we have paragraph 211, 240, which is dealing with other crimes. So how would you respond to that? And well, I'm afraid I can't really give you an answer. I can't answer that question. I'm very sorry. But I don't have the requisite knowledge. But if we're talking about the reports and so on, let me just add something that I forgot earlier on about this HCR 20, which I pointed out comes from Canada. Now, just imagine the following. All the expert reports or academic or study experience that are drawn up are based on experience. If we assess people and the situation is subsequently, then this is then correct. But what is theorized here is that people have a certain number of points means that they in future will commit acts of violence. However, as a result of this test result, it actually is the case that the person concerned will engage in violent acts, possibly, then they will not release him. So therefore, they never realize whether their initial hypothesis, i.e. that somebody who has been given a certain number of points will actually engage in further acts of violence, cannot be carried out and verified. So Therefore, bearing in mind the constitutional situations, it's out of the question that such a method should be applied at all, apart from the fact that the people can just become a matter for statistics and nothing else. They're just degraded in that respect.
I want to thank Madame Peter for an excellent presentation. You can't hear me? For an excellent presentation, but not in response necessarily to your comments, I would like to make some observations which I have gathered while you were presenting and during the comments. I think we have gone, as I see it, and I'm now speaking from my own personal view, as I see it, we have gone off the deep end. That means we are completely off on the wrong footing now. Because we are talking the language of the enemy. They keep talking about illness, diagnosis, borderline personality, schizophrenia, and so on, hospitals, doctors, and so on. I think the word expert was probably used 200 times in the last half hour. There are no experts here. We have a conflict between the individual and the state. The psychiatrists are no more experts than the lawyers. The lawyers are not experts on the law. They are prosecutors and defense lawyers. I have written about this 3 books almost 50 years ago. This has nothing to do with the Nazis and Nazis, first of all. The Nazis are very, very bad. We don't have to discuss that anymore. This has to do with psychiatric Nazis who are right here. In Syracuse, in New York, in Berlin. Yes. So to talk about, to use the word expert, is like accrediting a theological criminal with giving expert testimony about witchcraft. You cannot give expert testimony about witchcraft. You either try to convict the woman or acquit the woman. So the psychiatrists who get involved in this are either trying to kill the patient or save the patient. Now by kill I mean lock him up or destroy him. They are not experts. As long as we talk this language, we are finished.
Yeah, this is, darf ich dazu gerade etwas?
Can I just respond to that? Of course, you're quite correct. The word itself is incorrect. But if I'm talking about somebody, I'm not an expert because I'm talking about a thing itself. But that's what we did.
45 years ago, and I told the judge, Your Honor, the doctor in the hospital is not a doctor, he is the enemy of the patient. I am his doctor, I am the one he has to examine. And I am not an expert either, I am trying to get him out.
Yeah.
Of course, I was not successful. But I think I was more successful in exposing that this is a charade. This is a charade. To take this seriously is dangerous. We cannot be respectful towards a disrespectful occupation. We cannot show so much respect for these psychiatrists or for the media that caters to them. Thank you. I have just one or two more points I want to make very briefly. Yes. I am saying this tongue-in-cheek. I hope you can translate this accurately. I don't mean this. I'm going to exaggerate. But in some ways, one could say that the Nazi concentration camps were less bad than Bell hospitals. I tell you what, this is not my view. It's an old English-American idea. It's much easier to be confronted by another man who says, I am your enemy, I am out to destroy you. It's much harder to confront a man who says, I am your friend, I am trying to help you. And I am convincing everyone else that is trying to help you. So if you refuse help, that means you are some kind of an unmensch. Obviously, how can anybody refuse help? So this has to be undermined. These are not helpers. These are criminals. But they may be very decent
That's exactly what my patients say time and time and time again.
It is not correct for a lawyer in this situation, after all, one of these cases you mentioned was called to my own attention to my brother. I read the German literature also. It is hopeless. It might be more effective for you and a couple of other lawyers to give an interview to the press and explain why you will not go into this courtroom. Because you are not going into a courtroom, you are going into what is called in America a kangaroo court. Kangaroo court is one, the verdict has already been reached, like in Alice in Wonderland. Now we find out what should be the basis for the conviction. And when I hear even members of the jury talk about experts, and maybe get another psychiatrist in, I am dismayed. I'm absolutely dismayed. Whose side are we on? We can't be entirely impartial here. When there is such a conflict, we have to have some kind of sense of where we stand.
Good.
In Dante's Inferno, there is a special place for those who, when the angels fought, the good angels and the bad angels fought, declared themselves to be neutral. You cannot be neutral in a situation like this.
A response, if you like?
Yes, that's quite correct. And one of my colleagues said to me, when it comes to these procedures in particular, when a commitment to psychiatric clinics takes place, and there is just a routine hearing every other year just to adhere to formalities, then this is a constitutional fig leaf. But if I have a client, I don't have the possibility of saying, I think this is disgusting, I'm not going to go along with you. Of course, I can't leave my client alone. He needs me at his side as somebody, because things proceed nevertheless. We cannot undermine a system simply by not turning up. The system is going to continue to function, and this guy is sitting alone in front of the doctor and the court and the judge.
Something that is debatable.
Bitte.
We are talking about a tactic now. By showing up, I would argue that you are validating a system and perpetuating it. I think there would be alternatives, and perhaps others on the panel whom I know might want to add to this. I have said enough, but I am not so sure that you are doing more harm than good by showing up. Now, I am not saying this personally, obviously. I respect attempt to help in these situations, and I have been in similar situations, but I think at some point participation becomes validation rather than going on a strike against the system and making a protest somewhere outside the system, assuming that there is some press, some visibility outside. Thank you.
Kate?
It goes back to what we're saying with the last witness. It seems to me that law has been absolutely corrupted now by psychiatry, and it was never perfect to start with. It's only gotten worse, muddier, more unjust, more stupid. And also it's now tangling with magic. One thing about law is, you know, the corpus. He's dead or alive, he's in court, or he isn't. You have real evidence. Somebody's dead. Somebody got caught with a dollar bill in their hand, which they stole, and so forth. The superior character of law, as compared to psychiatry, is that it does deal, to some extent, with real evidence and real acts. What happened, and how did we get here? How did we get here so that you don't just serve your time? You break the law, you accept your punishment, or whether you do or not, you're going to get it. You do your time, and then you're finished. Now you do your time again, and probably forever. This is crazy. When did this come in? How much does psychiatry have to do with this? This is a never-ending sentence, like the gulag in Russia. You get exile for another 20 years and so forth. So we have permitted the whole business of paying your debt to society to completely degenerate now into paying an eternal debt to some absurd mystery about whether some shrink thinks you might do this again. How in the world would he ever know? And if he did know and you continue to be imprisoned, it's preventative detention, which is against every single human rights statute and most constitutional law. So now we have experts. I mean, it gets more and more like magic, or, you know, Dr. Zsa insists that it's like the Inquisition. I think it becomes really a lot like the Inquisition now, that psychiatry perpetuates what the Inquisition does and what the mysteries of religion and, you know, the state of the soul. It's so silly, but human lives are at stake. And it seems to me, too, that inasmuch as lawyers now go along with this jargon, you really are betraying justice, equity, and all good things. It seems to me the only thing that we can ever hope for is for law to refuse medicine or psychiatry to further oppress. That is, that we need legal defenses against psychiatry. And we need them very badly. We need living wills, for example, so that we can't be busted because we have a record or something. We also need our civil rights. We need real defense at commitment hearings rather than somebody stupid with drugs introduced to a stranger who sells them in 3 minutes to a judge who's already, you know, convinced they're crazy because the doctor said so. There's a group in Ohio that did very good work, a group of lawyer advocates, and what they did is they took the actual transcript of commitment hearings and then acted them out as skits. They're hilariously funny. They're real short. You can have your life bargained away in 3 to 5 seconds. 15 is a real long one. And what they did is they played different parts each time. One lawyer will be the judge in one skit, the crazy person in the next skit, the doctor in the next skit, and so forth. And so you begin to understand how utterly arbitrary it is, how perfectly silly, how it is an insult to the idea of trial or search for justice. And I think that's what we have to begin to do. You really have to attack the way that law has connived now with psychiatry, and in fact permitted itself to be overwhelmed by psychiatry.
Gerichte. Die Gerichte.
Yeah, it's conquered law. So somehow you have to get it back, because the idea of justice is too important to us.
Wobei das natürlich auch dann ein Appell an die...
Although, of course, that is also an appeal to politicians, to the lawyers.
Well, I would like to try to comment to Professor Zsa's comments. I wonder if it's helpful enough if we just separate...
Can you speak a little louder? I can't hear you too well.
I'm wondering if it's helpful enough to separate psychiatry from the whole political and power systems. Because, I mean, I'm thinking about social workers. And social workers, from what I've witnessed, have such an enormous power to do things that are just equal to what a psychiatrist can do, or sometimes even worse. And I can't look at the social workers detached or apart from the whole system, political system. So what I need to see is what behind these kind of powers, what is playing, what is motivating, what gives them such an enormous power. So I mean, psychiatry, I think that you brought an example, and I think that I heard you saying that in one case they said that they accepted the evaluations of the psychiatrist, but in another case they just dismissed them, right? So, I mean, judges can do opposite things and contradicting things. So, I mean, what we have to do to know and to find out is what are the power elements that are behind psychiatry. So psychiatry doesn't stand just by itself, that we can treat it or try to dissolve it or to get rid of it. Because, I mean, we get rid of the psychiatry and then very soon we'll find some other kind of element that is just as bad or just as harmful as the psychiatry. And we know that we have other elements. What's that? What happens here? So I think that the whole situation is even much more complicated. And we are actually fighting against the political structure, the power structures in society.
Well, there isn't time to discuss all of this, but thank you for your question, and forgive me if I refer you to my books written 40 and 50 years ago. What we have, in a nutshell, I had suggested that in the 20th century we had two totalitarian systems. International communism, international socialism called communism, and national socialism called Nazism. And we have replaced them with what I call the totalitarian state, or pharmacracy. Society does want to control people, undesirable people. Now, previously, it was people who were farmers in Russia, or Jews. Here it was Jews and gypsies, and you know all that. And now, in the Western democracies, it's the kind of people that we have heard of and we all know about. Mainly poor people. Poor people are always victims of laws. And let me add that when I use the word psychiatry, I am including, and those in America know this, the word psychiatry covers, in our vocabulary, clinical psychology, social work, and any other profession and some aspects of the law that uses terminology to manipulate and dispose of unwanted human beings. That is the term. That book is translated into German. That's a book, Cruel Compassion, Grausames something. Mitleid, thank you. Grausames Mitleid. But I have been writing about this for literally 50 years. I am a great believer in the Anglo-Saxon principle that you cannot, the world, life is not a disease. We can just get rid of one bad thing at a time. We have got an obviously bad thing, what to me is an obviously bad thing, and that is a psychiatric control of human beings. Now, whether something worse will replace it, I don't know. I hope that something worse will not replace it, because modern society does depend on legitimizing this kind of mistreatment, and it really doesn't have anything else to fall back on. It cannot fall back on race, on gender, on religion. It can fall back on medicine, health. We could go on, in some ways, public health is becoming psychiatrized. There's a great movement, as you know, smoking in America is practically like being Jewish in Germany. I mean, not quite, but it's coming there. And getting fat is going to be the next thing. And in some ways, all of this is supported by the social sciences who get money from the government. See, the corruption is in two directions, which has not been exposed. Half the money comes from the state, the other half of the money comes from the pharmaceutical companies. The people who oppose this have got no money. So we have got a problem, but we have got good ideas. We have the truth on our side. Unfortunately, we haven't got the press on our side. They hardly ever come or cover us. But that is my answer.
Forgive me one second. There's a question from the audience, please.